Meet Reed L. Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Howdy, folks. You're with Reed Lance Rosenthal and the Honorable Nancy Stewarts. This is going to be a great interview, and I think it's something that you need to hear and you need to think about, even though you really don't want to. Nancy is an international safety expert. She has served in various capacities at high levels of government, including the top cheese of the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, in several administrations. She is the author of three acclaimed books. I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about that. And she has been in a whirlwind media blitz over the last several weeks. CBS, NBC, Fox, NPR, I probably left a few out. But she's been in high demand because of the earthquake back east, because of the weather problems back east, and because of safety concerns and folks just not really getting it. But what we're going to talk about today is not just, you know, the yada yada day to day. Oh, we're going to have a hurricane, or we're going to have a minor earthquake, and how do we stay safe? We're going to talk about something on a much, much bigger level, and that is, I'm going to ask you guys to kind of play act with me, to close your eyes, to imagine the unimaginable. And I think this is a perfect time because this is September 11th. And on September 11th, 10 years ago, the unimaginable happened. So I'm going to ask you to expand your mind and think about that unimaginable that you have seen in your lifetime happen and expand it to a much bigger scale, and then ask yourself if you're ready. And Nancy's going to help you with some ideas on how to protect yourself, protect your family, and what to do in case the really big unimaginable happens. Let me give you a little background first. Nancy, why don't you tell the folks just a little bit about your books and also your website?
Oh, I'll be glad to, Reed. My books, I've written three books, and they are based a great deal on my experiences both in the government and then working with the corporate sector and then working with the public sector. The first book was called Safety in You. The second book is Safe Living in a Dangerous World, and that's basically what we're all doing right now is we're living in a very dangerous world.
An increasingly dangerous world.
Absolutely. And what I do in the book is go through all the various areas that people need to be concerned about, whether it's their family, the home that they're living in, the environmental issues that they're concerned about, the children that they're bringing up, as well as the homeland security issues, and then many of the weather-related issues that we've been going through so in such a major way over the last several weeks here on the East Coast, and then all of the various things that one needs to do to be safe. So in this book, I really have it's a great Bible, if you will, of how to live a safer life. And then the third book, which has just been recently released, is called Your Home Safe Home. And that's specifically related to issues that are in the home and things that one needs to do to be without accident, without injury, and to live a safer life.
Nancy, can you give the folks your website?
I'll be glad to. My website is www.nationalsafetyexpert.com. That's www.nationalsafetyexpert.com. And that website is loaded with a lot of new articles that I've put together and tips that one can look at so that they can really understand what they and their family really need to do to be safe. And it also has a lot of other good ideas and an opportunity for your listeners, Reed, to sign up so that I can be in contact with them and send them updated information as well.
Yes, listeners, I'd highly recommend it. And Nancy, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been an advisor to presidents and top administration officials in three administrations. Is that correct?
Five. Five administrations. Right. I started out actually as at the White House, and then I was the first consumer advisor to the Secretary of Agriculture, and I know that that's your love. And so I did a lot of work bringing the consumer voice into the agricultural world. And then I was and then I was at the Consumer Product Safety Commission as their chairman. I've served on the Federal Reserve National Advisory Board for Consumer Involvement. I've been at the Commerce Department working on the Baldrige Quality Award, and I've served under from Nixon all the way up through Bush 1.
Well, you know, thanks for all that hard, dedicated public service work. What we need is more of you now. I'm going to start off, listeners, with about a 5 to 10 minute, shall we say, platform setting. I'm going to set the stage for you. I'm going to tell you about some things that you've either heard about or know in your heart, or perhaps you're hearing for the very first time and it'll connect with some other dots in your head. You know, first of all, we have an administration right now that tells us one thing and does another. Now, in previous shows, I've presented the idea, is it intentional? Is it incompetent? Is it inexperience? And I've told you what I think. I think it's intentional. Whatever one of those things it is, we have a president who stood up the other night and gave us a so-called jobs bill, which was exactly the same thing he's been saying for 2.5 years, exactly the same policies which have failed, and which have failed, you know, for 2,000 years before this. This is just the facts. And what he has done is tell us that he is concerned about jobs. But the reality, not the words, but the reality, is that last Friday, that is September 2nd, the Labor Department, this is his own government, reported that the economy added no new non-farm payroll jobs in August. The unemployment rate stated is 9.1%. The real unemployment rate, if you count everybody who is underemployed or who's dropped out of the job market, either because they've been discouraged or because they have 2 years of unemployment benefits and, you know, why get off the couch, is closer to 18%. It's around 25% in some of the major metropolitan areas. In some of the racial classes, blacks, for instance, or youth, it's as high as 40% in some of the major metro areas. I want you to think about something. Unemployment means people don't have money. It means people can't buy basic services. It means that people are restless. Keep that thought in mind. Okay, we have a government which has run amok. On one hand, we're told that they're doing everything in their power that they can do to right this economy and make jobs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that they're very concerned with cutting the budget and cutting the deficit, but we don't see anything happening. In fact, one of the biggest job killers in the United States is the EPA, and you've all heard about this on the news, and I'm not going to get into the details, but the EPA has basically shut down industries. They have basically cost American business $1.75 trillion just trying to conform to their new rules and regulations, more than 4,000 of them over the last 12 months, 609 in July alone. We talked at length with Dave Rare 2 weeks ago about this, another Washington insider. Yet we have a post office that's $5 billion in the hole. We have a post office that has operating costs, including staff, most of it pensions of over 50%. And they're trying to compete with UPS and FedEx that have costs of 28% and 32% respectively. That's not going to happen. The post office is doomed. It's doomed by what's happening around the world in terms of communications. You know, people don't send letters anymore. And it's doomed because it can't compete with the private sector. Government never can. The answer is not government. Okay? The EPA, we're talking about cutting the budget. We're being fed this nonsense. The budget for the EPA, the biggest job-killing agency in the United States, increased 124%. That's 124% since Mr. Obama took office. That's right, the stroke of his pen. This is the same guy who's telling you he's concerned about your jobs. You want some more examples? Let me give you some more examples. Let's talk about Jeffrey Immel, okay, whose companies and far-flung tentacles funneled hundreds of thousands of dollars to Obama's election campaign in 2008. He's the chairman of GE. You know, where the government has made rules where you can't use incandescent light bulbs anymore. Toward the end of this year, you got to buy the new power-saving light bulbs. Guess who makes them? GE. Guess where they're made? China. I'm sure many of you have now heard that GE has moved its medtech from Wisconsin to China. They've moved their avionics and airline-related industries to China just in the last few months. Not only are they exporting jobs, Mr. Immel has exported 20% of GE's jobs to foreign countries in the last 2 years, while he's been the advisor to President Obama on how to create jobs here in the United States. Does that strike you as like a paradox, maybe? A coincidence? There are no coincidences. So this guy is selling our technology and moving our jobs across the sea, and he has the left-hand ear and the left-hand ear of the president, the right-hand ear of the president's wife. In fact, while the president was up there beating the drum, passed this bill and saying, "My favorite words are made in America," Jeffrey Immel sitting up in the box with his wife, the biggest exporter of jobs across the sea of any major company. And while the president is talking about, oh, we need to tax the millionaires and the billionaires and close the loopholes, his buddy Immel's sitting up there in that box. They got $5 trillion parked outside this country, offshore. They haven't paid taxes on. And last year, GE, look it up if you don't believe me, made $14 billion and didn't pay a penny in income tax. Does any of this strike you as incongruous? Now, is it on purpose? You bet it's on purpose. Okay? This is to stir unrest. These people have a plan. They have a plan. And I will tell you, let's go one step further. Their plan is to stay in power. You know, Acorn was defunded when all the fraud, voter fraud, et cetera, was exposed about a year ago by Congress. But Mr. Obama loves to go around Congress, and Congress, unfortunately, just doesn't have the moxie to stop him, unfortunately, for the Constitution. So I'm going to read you a little quote here. This is from Newsmax, Monday, August 29th. There is no wall of separation between Project Vote, this is what Acorn is now calling itself, and the well-known Acorn organization, according to Matthew Vadim, the Capital Research Center editor who wrote Subversion, how Obama's Acorn red shirts are still terrorizing and ripping off the American taxpayers. Let me go one step further. Project Vote's field director, the Obama campaign is calling their registration effort right now Project Vote. Gee, that's the same as Acorn. You know the field director of this whole nine yards? Her name is Amy Busefink. That's Busefink. In November, you know, this is like, you know, 10 months ago, she pled no contest to two counts of conspiracy to commit the crime in Nevada of compensation for registration of voters. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that incident is called a major Acorn-approved voter fraud conspiracy, quote-unquote, by the court. The Project Vote name was actually used in a recent email from the Obama campaign committee. I quote, "Project Vote will embark on a voter registration effort to maximize voter participation. Project Vote will drive our campaign strategy from paid media to digital outreach to grassroots organizing and voter registration efforts to communicate with and engage key demographic groups." What do you think those demographic groups are? Do you think it might be the unemployed? Do you think it might be those people who are restless? Those people who feel underprivileged, those people who feel that somebody else owes them something. We've become a country where we have lost touch with the self-reliance which made us great. But let me tell you, the first thing that you need to do before you're self-reliant is you need to be safe. And that's why I have Nancy on the program right now. Because the safer you can keep yourself, the more able you will be, if the unfortunate happens in the future, to help others and to rebuild the country or those portions of the country affected by what could be cataclysmic events. Before I go one step further, the same president, by the way, who stood up the other night and talked about jobs and has talked about, oh, the last thing I think about before I go to bed is jobs. Yeah, okay, Mr. Obama, whatever you say. In the meantime, while he's up there lecturing Congress and lecturing the United States and lecturing all of us about how concerned he is with the jobs and about how his great new program, which is the same old stuff, is going to create jobs, his Justice Department is raiding Gibson guitars. Everybody's heard of Gibson guitars. They're famous. I mean, they're probably the best-known guitar brand in the world. They've been around for a century. Gibson guitars built their frets. You know, that's the long neck of the guitar where you put your fingers to make the chords, out of a rosewood that comes from India. The frets are all assembled in the United States, and there's 40 great-paying jobs that do just that. There's 6 or 7 guitar companies, more or less on an equal plane with Gibson in the United States. 6 of those companies are owned by Democrats who contribute to Democratic causes. Gibson is owned by a gentleman who's a Republican. Last week, his company was raided by armed SWAT teams from the Justice Department. They confiscated all his Indian rosewood, saying, with an obscure part of the act, saying basically that this was an endangered species and couldn't be imported. But guess what? Do you know what would have made him legal? If you don't believe me, Google up Gibson guitar raids. Just Google it up. I mean, your eyes will pop out of your head. He would have been legal if the frets had been made in India and then shipped to the United States. In other words, the 40 American jobs using this rosewood to build these famous American guitars, you know, that Made in America stamp that Mr. Obama says are his favorite 3 words, it would have been totally legal to build those frets in India using the same rosewood and then bring them in and attach them to the guitars. What's illegal is American workers using that rosewood to do it. Think about that. This is the gentleman who tells us he's concerned about jobs. How about Boeing? Not only is Mr. Immel exporting technology to help China's airlines, who will be Boeing's biggest competitors in the future, and Boeing employs tens of thousands of people around the United States. It's one of the stalwarts of America's industries. But Mr. Obama's National Federal Labor Relations Board, his appointees, his personal appointees, this is not somebody that was sitting there before he got into office, have shut down a billion-dollar plant in South Carolina that Boeing has already built, that employed, had already hired 1,000 new jobs. No jobs were lost at Boeing's other plants. These are new jobs, and the NRLB has shut them down at the time that China is picking up its airline industry with the help of GE, an American company, through Jeffrey Immel, an Obama campaign contributor. You know, if this doesn't piss you off, I don't know what will. But let me tell you something. All this comes to kind of a focal point, and this is what I'm about to talk to Nancy about. And I hope you listen, and I hope you think. I want you to imagine something. There's a lot of dangers in the world right now. It doesn't necessarily come from within our country. I'm just giving you a few examples of that. It can come from without our country. It can come from offshore. Close your eyes and pretend you wake up one morning. You flick the light switch and nothing happens. You go to the refrigerator and your food is spoiling because there's no refrigeration. You pick up the phone to call your neighbor and it's dead. You try your cell phone. It doesn't work. You go, wow, what's happening here? I better get in my car and drive around and see if, like, other people are experiencing this. You see gas. gas stations with either long lines of cars or completely empty because there's no fuel. You figure, oh, I better get some food in the door. You drive down to the local supermarket, the windows are broken, or the shelves are bare, or it's locked. Well, maybe I better turn on the radio and find out what's happening. There is no radio. Do you think this is far-fetched? I hope it's far-fetched, but you know, I don't think it is. Because here's all the things that could create that kind of situation, either across the nation or in specific areas, particularly larger metropolitan areas, and particularly on the east or west coasts. Let's say there's a cataclysmic natural disaster, a huge earthquake, a huge storm, a combination of the two, which knocks out the power grid, stops transportation. Food and fuel and gas can't come in. You don't have refrigeration. I mean, many of you have experienced this for a day or two at a time in a hurricane or in a tornado or whatever. Think about it for an extended period of time. What if it goes on for months? What if it goes on for a year or two? What are you going to do? What if there is a war somewhere else? You know, this Arab Spring, another ideological hurrah of the Obama administration, this Arab Spring, what if a Jihadist there in Iran, what if what he screams and yells and writes about, the destruction of Israel, what if he's telling the truth? What if what he writes is the same as Hitler writing Mein Kampf 5 years before World War II? What if there's a nuclear war? Iran with nuclear weapons and Israel with nuclear weapons trying to protect itself in the Mideast. Do you think that radiation's just going to stay there? Do you remember the panic about radiation coming over from Japan from the two nuclear reactors? Think about 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 nukes going off. Those boys are going to play for keeps. This is survival over there. It's ideology versus survival. And I don't think the Jewish people are going to go down quietly this time. That radiation cloud could reach the United States. It could shut down and affect everything we're talking about. What if there's a natural event like a huge sun flare that, you know, we're humans. We don't know much. We know sun flares affect communications. They're like huge electromagnetic pulses. Let's say something happens within our solar system that's completely beyond our control and unforeseen and knocks out the power grid and the communication grids on Earth. What if there's civil unrest here? What if that unemployment figure keeps growing because of the policies of this government and, you know, several millions of people, because of social media, because they can link automatically, decide, gee, it's time for me to take what I think is mine. I'm justified. I'm a have-not. I want what the haves have. Maybe they're really a nice guy. Maybe they've been a law-abiding citizen and worked their butts off at three jobs for the last 10 years trying to feed their kids, and now they can't, and they're desperate. Desperate people do desperate things. What are you going to do if that happens? Do you have a plan? Most of you don't, but all of you need to. Nancy, I'm glad you listened to my little lead up here for you because you're on. Tell me and tell particularly the listeners what you would suggest in the event of one of these macro events, unforeseen, natural disaster, a man-caused disaster, an offshore disaster. I mean, the list is almost endless as to what could shut systems down across the country or particularly in major metropolitan areas. Number one, what do people need to do to have a plan? What would you recommend?
Well, that's a very, very interesting scenario you painted, Reed. And actually, if we brought it down a little bit, down to a more of a micro situation, this is what we're going through in this country in many different areas. If you take a look at the horrendous fires in Texas, you take a look at the hurricanes that are taking place on the East Coast in areas that nobody ever had a hurricane before. You look at the earthquakes that we've had on the East Coast where an earthquake has never taken place.
Careful, Nancy. Al Gore's going to tape this show and distribute it as evidence of global warming.
But it was, to me, it was a huge wake-up call to people who, like you said, are frankly unprepared. I mean, they think, nothing's going to happen to me. That'll happen some other place in the world. That'll happen some other place in the country. But it's never going to happen in my own area. And this is where your point is so well taken.
Yeah, Nancy, let me ask a question. I mean, in your opinion, you deal with lots of people on these types of issues, okay?
Yes, I do.
I mean, we're out here in Wyoming. We have our community, and this is not a place that bad folks would want to come. But in a metropolitan area where it's much more anonymous and people kind of live their day-to-day lives, and you deal with those people all the time and you deal with people in government, is it a fair statement to say that people are kind of like living in a surreal world, that this can't ever happen, and if it does, somebody else will handle it?
Yes, and that's what we're calling, this is what I call, we're living in a dependency era. Somebody will take care of me. I'll be okay. I'm going to survive it. There's a program, some government program that's going to pay my bills, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that we really need to get back to personal, individual responsibility. You are only responsible for yourself at every juncture in this whole scenario. And you also, we have to get back to this thinking that we also have to be concerned about our neighbors. How many areas, and you're living out in the West, in that beautiful, beautiful world, but back here on the East Coast, you know, it's loads of very close living, condominiums, apartments, neighborhoods. People don't even know their next-door neighbor. There's no sense of community. So one of the things that I think needs to absolutely happen is we need to have emergency preparedness at the local level, where people really start thinking about what if something like this happens.
Who is, putting aside government, putting aside the cops, putting aside the fire department, who is my team? Who can I rely on?
Can
I rely on the neighbor next door? Can I rely on the guy across the street? Is there things that we can do together for our mutual protection and safety? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
You
can definitely rely on, if, let's say, a major incident took place like you were just outlining. The community involvement is absolutely critical, because within that community, and it may be just on your individual street. It could be in a larger community. There is all kinds of expertise that needs to be made known, and that can be extremely helpful in this kind of a situation. If you're in a scenario where there is no 911 that's going to work, there's no ambulance that's going to come and take care of you, there is no fire truck that's going to come and put out the fire, you may have to rely on your neighbors. And how smart is it to know that somebody on your street is a doctor, that somebody else is a nurse, that somebody else has plumbing skills, that somebody else has ability to share some of their food with you? This is the community that we need to get back to, not this big global scenario where we're going to be depending upon the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Agriculture, wherever it might be, the governor's office or even the mayor.
You know, we can't even depend on them when things are quote-unquote functioning.
No, that's exactly right. So I am a very major advocate of getting to know your neighbors, really putting together a community plan, and then really having your own responsible family plan.
Yeah, you know, I'll break in here for just a moment and use this 50 miles of ranch road our place is on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's about 20 ranch houses.
Mm-hmm.
Down this 50 miles. And, you know, this is not formal meetings. This is not getting together and, you know, mapping out some master plan. But I will tell you that all of us have talked. All of us knows what the skill sets of the others are.
Oh,
all of us have discussed what would happen if the unthinkable happens. All of us have discussed shall we say, how we're prepared and how we could help others. And there's a general sense of community in terms of defense, in terms of sustaining life, and in terms of, you know, continuing on with a day-to-day existence. Because that's what I'm asking the listeners to think about. I'm asking them to think about the unthinkable, okay? And I'm not trying to be an alarmist. There are so many dangers out in this hugely unstable and growing more unstable by the day world that it's something that you need to do. PPPPP, prior planning prevents poor performance. Nancy, if you could, boil it down to, let's say, you've talked about the neighborhood. I agree 100%. Absolutely critical. Boil it down to somebody's own house, their own apartment, their own condominium. What can they do if they can't get out of there? And we're going to talk about that. But if they can't get out of there, what can they do to make their residence safe?
Okay. Great question. The first thing they need to do is to have a plan. That's very simple. Have a plan and discuss it before anything has ever taken place. I just did a show the other day where we were preparing for Hurricane Irene. And I took a family through, I reviewed their home with them as to exactly how safe it was and what they needed to do before the hurricane hit. This was a very, very nicely put together home. And it was also a family that was very forthcoming in questions and also in their concerns. And I went through every single thing in the home. And here's some very simple things. Okay, you're getting ready for a hurricane. And you've never gone through it before, so you have no idea what you might be expecting. And I went from the front all the way back. And I looked, as I was going through their windows, I said, look, you need to have very secure windows. Everything needs to be airtight. And if it's not, that you've got to caulk it all and make sure that there are no little pinholes. And as I looked at those windows, I was looking at the skylights, and I looked up, and in the skylights, there was a big chunk of wood that had been sort of removed. And I said, you know, that could absolutely ruin this entire gorgeous home, because when the hurricane hits, you're going to get water that's going to just devastate you. And he goes, I didn't even know that was up there. Well, most likely that crack came from the earthquake that we had just gone through a week ago. And I said, you need to get somebody out here with him the next day, get that fixed, etc. That probably saved him $30,000 in water damage. Okay.
You bet. Here's what I'd like you to do if you could, because that stuff is terrific. Okay, you got a hurricane coming. I consider that, I know folks will roll their eyes, that's kind of an everyday event, okay? It's a hurricane. We have anywhere from 13 to 20 named storms a year. I'm talking about, I want you, if you could, Nancy, go one step further for the audience. Let's say it's not just a hurricane. You're not worried just about wind and water and monetary damages. It's the next step. It's the next step. Would you recommend that people, perhaps when they get together with their neighborhood groups, decide where the neighborhood's going to hole up? Or would you suggest that people stay in their individual residences, which are a little bit less defensible? I mean, go one step further.
Okay. That's a good question, and that is going to depend upon what the absolute situation is that you're dealing with. Sometimes it is better to stay within your own home or the building that you happen to be in when this incident takes place. Sometimes it is better to go someplace and to get away from it. So that's where you really need to know what the various specific situations are.
And it comes down to your plan, right?
That comes down to my plan. Now, the second thing is with the family, whether it's a little five-year-old child or the senior citizen that is handicapped, they all need to be brought into this so you know exactly what you're going to do when something occurs, because it's that mindset that you've got that has been pre-programmed so that you can know, I'm going to move, I'm not going to move, we got to worry about Johnny and getting him out. But if everybody knows, this is what I'm going to do, this is where I'm going to go. And then also you need to have what I call a very extensive emergency supply system within your home.
Great. That was exactly where I was going. To sum up this little part, though, what you're really saying, if I boil it down, is you need two plans. You need a plan for, should we say, the typical disaster, a hurricane, an earthquake, a tornado, and then you need a plan that expands further to the unthinkable disaster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cataclysmic disaster.
That's right, because on the major disaster that you were talking about, excuse me, I take some water, that is where you have to think as it's happening. If you take a look at 9/11 and the devastation that took place across those three sites, those people had done extensive planning as to what, you know, as to what they were going to do in New York, and also the same thing in the Pentagon. But the tragedies that were occurring took incredible leadership on the part of the people that were dealing with them. And in looking at the coverage from the 9/11 devastation, it really was a wake-up call, even to me, that I deal with this all the time, to see the incredible bravery, the incredible on-the-spot thinking that these individuals had when they were dealing with this incredible...
Absolutely. It was neighbor to neighbor, office worker to office worker. There wasn't any government saving these people.
No.
They were saving themselves. They had the presence of mind.
Saving themselves.
You know, I was struck on the Fox deal, which I thought was a terrific collage of, you know, that unbelievable day. That one guy who was the floor safety director...
Yes.
Who helped the gentleman out from under the, pulled him through the wall and helped him out from under the desk.
Absolutely.
That guy is an example of a guy who had a plan.
He
knew, I mean, even though this was beyond his comprehension, what was going on, he had a plan. He knew where things were. He knew where the flashlight was. Remember he says, the first thing I did was turn on my flashlight?
Yes.
I mean, how many people would have a flashlight in an office? It sounds like a stupid little thing. It could save your life.
Absolutely, and it's that kind of thing that's just a basic. Those are things that, okay, you don't even have to think about it. You know the lights are out. You know exactly how to get to it, okay? What we've got in this country right now are people that haven't even thought about having to survive on their own. And by having this in a very focused manner, both in the home, in the schools, in the office, then you are going to have to. I mean, you will find that the people will then start saying, "I'm more assured about what I'm going to do the next time around."
Sure, and you know the school thing is great. Let's say something like this happens midday on a school day, and let's say you know your car is parked out front. You got an eighth of a tank of gas. And, of course, your first instinct as a parent is going to go down and get your kid. You don't have the fuel to get there. The gas stations are closed. There is no gas. There's long lines. I mean, whatever is going on. I mean, what are you going to do in that instance? People need to take this plan, and they need to think, what if? And then they need to go to the next level and go, and what if is even worse? I mean, I can't emphasize strongly enough that folks need to sit back and close their eyes and imagine the most calamitous what if, down to the details. Is it a weekday or is it a weekend? Are the kids at school? Are they not at school? What's going to happen if the hubby's off to work or the wife is off to work or whatever? Where are we going to rendezvous? Are we going to stay with the house, stay with the neighborhood, or are we going to get the hell out? All this needs to be a plan within a plan. And let's go to, you were just getting into what you need to have in your house and what you need to have ready to go at a moment's notice. You're not, if something like this happens, the chances are you will not, you know, this is not going to be like a hurricane that you have 5 days advance warning on. This is going to be out of the blue, like at 8:17 a.m., September 11th, 2001. Blue skies, beautiful day, everybody's going about their business, and in the space of a second, the world changes.
Right. Okay, let's go through some specifics. In both your home and in your car and in your office, you need similar things, okay, because you never know where you're going to be. First, you need emergency supplies as it relates to food. Food that you can actually live on for 3 days. And it's amazing what you can live on for 3 days. You don't need to use a stove because it isn't going to be one. It's not going to be refrigerated, but there are some wonderful things that you can buy that will give you substance for 3 days. The second thing you need to have is water, because water is one of the first things that gets contaminated. Enough water that you can have to survive, okay? And obviously, if you're in your office, you're not going to be carrying gallons around, but you're going to have enough that you can actually, you know, live on. The third thing is some emergency medical supplies. For example, if you get cut, or if you have if your arm gets broken or whatever, what can you do to mend that on a temporary basis so that you're still going to be able to survive? Your prescription drugs, that's so important for so many people's health, that they have those prescriptions with them. They don't need to have 100 of them on a prescription, but you need enough for at least, let's say, a week that you can survive on. Obviously, you need lighting equipment, the flashlight, and some backup batteries, a backup battery for your cell phone.
And candles.
And obviously matches to go with the candles. Be careful with the candles that you don't cause more of a problem. But the flashlights and their batteries are extremely important. Many times you might have cell phone ability outside of your area but not inside your area. So that's why you need the backup battery for your cell phone, because if you're like I am, it's when I need it so desperately that I find, gosh darn it, it has to be charged.
Right. Think about this, folks. Think about this one little thing. Let's say self-service is not disrupted. I mean, in the worst event, it's not going to matter because there won't be self-service. But let's say self-service is not disrupted, but you have no power. That's not going to help you much, is it, when your battery runs out?
That's right. And if you think back on 9/11, when the plane was going through, was on its way to go through the Pentagon, a very good friend of mine, Barbara Olson, whose husband is Ted Olson, she was able on that plane to call Ted and tell him exactly what was happening.
And she died with the plane that went into the Pentagon, didn't she?
She died on that plane, but
yeah.
A couple of things happened. Number one, she was able to get a hold of him. She was able to tell him exactly what was happening, and he was able to also, you know, talk to her, walk her through this, and say his goodbyes, okay? But the other thing that he was able to do was to alert the other people in Washington of exactly what was happening with that American Airlines plane. So, and the same thing with the Pennsylvania situation, where the gentleman that was one of the leaders of that scenario up there of keeping it away from the Capitol was able to call his wife and talk to her. So that cell phone is absolutely critical.
You bet. And folks, it's not just the cell phone. It's the power for the cell phone. And that's why the second battery is such a great suggestion. I mean, it's a tiny little thing. It could save your life. It could save the lives of others. Nance, last show, I had a few minutes where, actually, I think it was the show right before Dave Rare. I talked about people's foodstuffs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about food here. I actually recommended that they have a store of 30 days food, which is about 1,200 to 1,500 calories per person in your family per day. So a family of four is 180,000 calories. And you want a good stock of canned food. It also has water in it, so you can be hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you also want some dried foods, particularly fruits, because they have nutrients and minerals and other things.
Right, that's good.
And folks, this doesn't do you any good to have them stored in the cupboard where you have to stock them and you have to move them, because you may not have the time to do that. This stuff needs to be in ready-made boxes and crates that can be moved rapidly and quickly, depending upon whether you are evacuating or you're not, or depending upon whether you need to get in the cellar or you need to live in the rest of the house, or depending upon whether you're going to go to the neighbor's house because that's the neighborhood plan. Okay? You need to really think in advance. It's the details, and I'm not saying this lightly, that will kill you if you don't think about it.
Oh, that's absolutely right, and I like your idea of having it all boxed up like that and in a closet or in an area where you know exactly how to get to it if there's not a speck of light for you to see.
You know, another thing that I recommend to folks is buy a couple of cheap sleeping bags. I mean, you can buy a decent cheap sleeping bag that'll keep you halfway warm, except in winter conditions, for about 20 or 25 bucks. Have one for each member of the family in the trunk of the vehicle that you will be using if you need to use it, so that it's there. Okay? Keep your trunk stocked with this stuff if you need to move quickly. Remember the expiration dates on it. Rotate the food. Rotate the foodstuffs out. Rotate the batteries out. And have them on hand. And by the way, to go one step further on Nancy's flashlight thing, which is huge. I mean, you have an example right there on national TV of a flashlight saving a guy's life on September 11th, 2001. Two batteries isn't going to do it. Okay, batteries have a shelf life of about 6 months. Remember to keep shifting them out. You can use the old ones and replace them with new ones in your emergency storage. But, you know, have eight double D batteries. Have enough batteries to keep that flashlight going if you use it sparingly for a month. Think about all this in the context of at least a month. You know, a three-day event is a hurricane. A one-month event is one of these macro, cataclysmic, unfathomable, but nonetheless, unfortunately, realistic situations that any of us could be faced with without any warning whatsoever, just like at 8:17 a.m. 10 years ago today. Nance, let's go to the next subject because I think it's really important. What would you recommend to people, you know, let's say they're in a residential neighborhood and they're in a single-family home, because obviously this is not available to apartment and condo dwellers. Would you recommend that they have some backup power, you know, some backup generation power?
It's a very interesting question. We've had some major problems right now with this generator situation because a lot of people are taking the generators and bringing them inside, which is absolutely devastating.
Yeah, the carbon monoxide will kill you.
With the carbon monoxide situation, and it has to be 50 feet away from the home because the carbon monoxide can come in. The generator problem there seems to be a necessity to have safer generators, and I don't know whether you in the West have found generators that are safe or not, but here it's just been a big problem. What's your thought on that?
Well, I'll tell you what we have found is that your diesel, natural gas, or propane generators that'll power the key parts of your home. You know, you don't need lights on in every room. I mean, if they'll power the appliances in the refrigerator, and they'll power the utility room, and they'll power one room of lights, you're going to be better off than 99.99999% of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll last a long time. There are a lot of good generator systems out there. I invite people to do their own research. But you can actually get a pretty good generator system installed for as little as $2,000. And, of course, you can go up from that to a Cadillac system.
Right.
But it could be instrumental in saving your life or saving the lives of your neighbors, you know, who are not as prepared as you. Because in the end, when one of these things happens, let me say if one of these things happens, I'm going to try and be an optimist here, what you are able to do to keep yourself safe, secure, and functioning will help others. And that is key.
That's absolutely correct.
So I would recommend for folks who can, you put an outside-based generator. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to power the whole house. For a modicum of backup power, you know, there was an article you and I were talking about before the show. One lineman screwed up on some wire somewhere, and 900,000 homes were out of power 3 days ago. One guy. Now, can you imagine a concerted attack on the power grid of the United States, or an EMP that Iran might be able to set off, or North Korea, you know, another bunch of maniacs? I mean, just think about that. Think about nothing working. I mean, you really have to kind of step back, close your eyes, and imagine the unimaginable. And then you need to plan for it. And you know what? If it never happens, all that stuff's in place. Your food stores, you can continue to eat it. Food is going up. I've given you guys all sorts of examples of, you know, 35 to 165% inflation in the last 2 years since the Anointed One took office on basic foodstuffs. So buying food now will save you money later. I mean, you can't lose by doing this stuff. You can't lose.
That's exactly right. Another couple of tips, too. The clothing that you're going to put in this emergency supply
Great suggestion.
Area, make sure that you have sturdy shoes, because I look again back at 9/11 and see the people that were having to go down those 80 flights, and the women in the very fashionable high heels. Just think of what that would have been like. Going on your bare feet, I mean, it's going to be terrible. So, but if you had a very good, strong pair of sturdy shoes that you could move regardless of what the situation was in a quick, effective manner.
What a great point.
And also the clothing should be natural fiber. Stay away from the blends, because, as you know, if you've got a blended fabric that could melt and you've had a major, major burn. So some real sturdy shoes and some good sturdy clothing. And also you may need to, if it should be a nuclear type of attack, you need to have something that's going to cover you so that if you get into it, you can take that off. And there are some in some of the supply stores that are working on this emergency supply area. They do have garments that you can put over that are safe to be put over your own clothing, and then you take them off.
Great, great, really great points, Nancy. I'll tell you that what we do is we have a duffel bag.
Uh-huh.
And that duffel bag is loaded with clothes.
Oh,
you know,
that's great.
Like three changes of clothes for everybody in the family, plus you know, a heavy coat, a rain slicker for everybody in the family, gloves for everybody in the family, mittens for everybody in the family. I mean, because you don't know. This could happen, you know, in February at 20 below.
Absolutely.
It could happen in August at 100 above. And that duffel bag sits right in our utility room, which is about 10 feet from where the truck is.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, literally, you throw it in the back, and you know it's packed, and you're ready to go. You don't have to look for anything.
And another thing that people need is actual cash to be put away in a safe place, because there isn't going to be any place to use the ATM and the checks aren't going to work. But if you've got some cash that is available to you, it's amazing what you're going to be able to do.
Another great suggestion, and maybe a few silver or gold coins wouldn't be bad either.
And, of course, speaking of your truck or your car, make sure it's full of gas. I was looking at my own car the other day as I was getting ready for the next hurricane situation, and I thought, I think we better stop at a gas station, and that needs to be full. You really shouldn't go below a half because you just don't know what's going to happen. You get stuck on one of those highways where you're going nowhere for 5 hours.
Absolutely. And
out of luck.
And I'm going to add something for you folks that are in more rural locations where you have a few acres. You can buy yourself a 100 or 300 or 500, if you're really ambitious, gallon fuel tank. It sets up on pedestals. You put it kind of in a, I'm sure you've all seen the silver watering troughs that ranchers use for cattle so that there's no leakage into the ground. It's perfectly safe. It's lined. And you can fill that up, and that is your emergency fuel supply. Now, obviously, you can't do that in town. You can't have a fuel tank in a neighborhood. But what you can do is you can store fuel in plastic containers so that you have at least a tank of gas in storage in your garage, away from everything, away from ignitable suspects, out of the heat, and only in plastic, approved plastic containers, so that if worst comes to worst and everything breaks down, you have enough gas to get out of Dodge.
Oh, that's good. That's very good. Another area that they should address, and this is all in my book, Safe Living in a Dangerous World. I really have got all
which, by the way, is a great book.
Yeah, you have a copy of this.
I do.
This has everything lined up for you, so you don't even have to think. All you have to do is open it, and everything is very specifically laid out. But the records that you have, your will, your stocks, your insurance policies, all of that needs to be kept in a waterproof portable container that you take with you wherever you're going to go if it's an emergency situation, because if you need that insurance policy and it's all burned up or damaged by water, isn't going to help you much.
And assuming the insurance company, under the worst scenarios, even exists anymore.
Well, that's right. And speaking of insurance, Reed, people really need, I hope they'll just take this time to get out their insurance policies and look at them and read them and see if they have the proper coverage. On the East Coast, we have had these hurricanes and earthquakes. Earthquakes are not covered. In hurricanes, people are coming to this incredible new revelation that the tree that just went down, there was no coverage because it was under the hurricane.
Exactly. And many people have found out they don't have flood insurance.
And they do not have flood insurance. And that's a separate policy under FEMA. And if you don't have flood insurance, you're not going to have anything covered. And how devastating is that? So you need to read and be very specific about what your deductibles are. Because under hurricane coverage, just as an example, the deductibles are so high based upon the wind damage and the level of the hurricane, then people are just incredibly devastated.
Right. They think they're covered. They think they're covered, and these poor people come back. Their homes are in ruins, and they find out that they don't have a vestige of the monies it's going to take to restore their lives.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that I'll mention along the lines of insurance, folks, read the fine print. I mean, if you have to, spend $100 and have an insurance attorney read it for you and explain to you what it means. It's a worthwhile investment because there's all sorts of outs. For instance, there are certain insurance policies where you have fire coverage, but if the fire is caused by another event, a forest fire in some cases, or a hurricane in some cases, you're not covered at all.
That's right.
And, you know, think about that. Think about being alive, surviving this huge ordeal, coming home. There is no home. I mean, it's in ruins. And you go, well, that's okay. I'm going to call my insurance agent down there at, you know, whatever insurance company XYZ, and I'm going to get all this fixed. And he goes, gee, I'm really sorry, but this clause in paragraph C, subsection 2, subsection A, this you're not covered. That's a bad day.
That is a bad day. And right now there's a big controversy in the Washington area. In the state of Maryland, as an example, parts of Maryland were covered under their insurance policies, county by county by county. Other parts were not. And people are in an uproar about this because some people had a $500 deductible because they have to state what your deductible is on the insurance policy, and other people come under this hurricane deductible, which could be up to $10,000 to $20,000.
Yep. So that's another terrific, terrific suggestion. What about communications, Nancy? You know, we have in all our ranch houses, and I know all the neighbors do too, they're emergency radios. Have you seen those?
Are you talking about the NOAA radios?
Yeah, the NOAA radios.
NOAA radios are a important item to have, and you can get those in any Radio Shack type of place.
Right, and you can crank them to generate their own power, and some of them even have solar setups that'll, you know, recharge their batteries so that you have some kind of communications, and all of them have the emergency bands, because under the worst conditions, you would hope that somebody in authority somewhere is going to at least, if all the airwaves are knocked out, they're at least going to get the emergency broadcast system up and running, and these radios are specifically designed to pick that up.
Right, and that's coming under the National Weather Service. I have great applause for the work of the National Weather Service. They are very focused and really right on target.
They are one of the few government departments that actually functions.
Yes, and they are terrific. I work very closely with them, and I'm very, very pleased with the work that they do. It's also very interesting when you're talking about communication. I was at a meeting yesterday. We were talking about the communication plans that the emergency responders have. And do you know that still, we are 10 years later, they still do not have the necessary equipment they need to be able to be in constant communication with each other? And it's unbelievable to me. They also still don't have the standards put together to make all the communication.
Oh, listen, we're too busy diverting funds to increase EPA's budget 124% and into Project Vote, so that folks can, you know, manipulate the votes so they can stay in power.
Well, it's very interesting. Not only that, but they were saying that in communities, individual communities, and this is where your listeners need to really check on whether it's a county that is your voting block, or whether it's city or even more local than that, to find out what kind of equipment they've got in your own area. Because many times they would rather spend it on the brand new fire truck that's going to get them a lot of votes, because that's something they're going to see, than to put in a sophisticated communication program for their emergency responders. And this is absolutely imperative that we get those responders the equipment they need, and it is absolutely not happening. I was astounded when I heard that yesterday. 10 years later, and we're still not giving the folks that are protecting us what they need.
Yeah, we could go on all day about the diversion of monies at the level of the government and what's wasted and what's not. And the what's wasted is a much longer list. So I think this has been a great show. You and I could talk all day about this. Unfortunately, we only have an hour show. But I hope that people have taken away from this at least some basic concepts. Number one, have a plan for what I would call a normal, unthinkable disaster. A hurricane, a tornado, a wildfire, whatever. Expand that plan into the unthinkable cataclysmic disaster, which could be caused by a whole series of events either within our borders or outside of our borders that we have no control over. And those situations become more probable, and they become more dangerous, and they become more apparent every day. All you got to do is read the news, okay? Things that happen far away can affect us here in the most basic day-to-day minutes of our lives, and they can affect us without warning. Number two, I think Nancy's suggestion on food stocks, which I've also given you, is excellent. Have it minimum of 3 days, Nance, right?
Minimum.
And I'm recommending 30 days.
Uh-huh.
Have them crated and ready to go. If you don't need to move the crates, you open them up and you use them there at the house. But if you need to move, you can be out of there in a nanosecond. Nancy's suggestion on clothing was terrific. I've told you what our family does. You know, it doesn't take much money, and you probably already have the stuff in your closet, to put it in a duffel bag and put it by the door. I mean, it takes nothing. It takes a few minutes. It could be the difference between life and death. Emergency backup power. Check into that. Make sure that you have fuel for your car. Make sure it's stored safely in a safe area in approved plastic. Let me emphasize this, plastic containers. Okay. Make sure you have water. This is really easy. Go down to your local supermarket. They have 2.5-gallon jugs of water with a little spout on them. And, you know, buy 20 of them. Put them down in the cellar. It's never going to go bad. I mean, you just spent $20. Is your life worth $20? My life's worth $20. I got it down in the cellar. And we can go on and on, but the bottom line is be prepared. Think. Close your eyes. Think about the unthinkable and think about what you and your family are going to do if it occurs, the types of day it would occur, and the types of event it would be. Get close with your neighbors. Build that sense of community for defense, for skills, for ideas, for a safe haven. Did I leave anything out, Nance?
Oh, there's two other things I'd like to say.
Oh, absolutely,
one,
please. Yeah,
one is have a list of the contact numbers for people that you need to get in touch with.
Ah, terrific idea.
Yeah, that's really important. And secondly, have an outside contact number. For example, if you're in Wyoming, you may want to have somebody in Nebraska have be your contact that everybody could call and say, I'm okay, you know, I'm at this point. Because a lot of times, as I said earlier on your show, Reed, people may not be able to get to people within their own area where the devastation is, but they can get outside the area.
Right.
And my last point is check your house thoroughly. Make sure that it is ready for whatever might be zooming on the horizon. And by that, I'm always recommending now that you have a certified, qualified home inspector check that home every year to make sure that everything is in place, that your outside is not going to be a potential disaster for you with erosion or water seepage coming in. Just check it thoroughly to make sure that it is ready for whatever might be coming.
Let me talk about one quick subject before we wrap up, because we haven't. What about home defense? Now, this will be a dicey subject for some of the listeners, and other listeners, you know, they already have it.
Uh-huh.
Would you recommend that folks have at least one firearm in the home and have taken the courses to know how to use it properly?
That has not been on my list, but it certainly is something that one could think about. And you're probably more qualified than I am to speak on that.
Yeah, my suggestion to folks is even if you abhor guns, even if they're against your basic nature, you don't want to be in a situation where you are in a self-defense mode and the other party is armed and you are not, or there's 10 of them and there's one of you. I mean, that's not a place you want to be, particularly in a desperate situation. Remember, desperate people do desperate things. You can rely on that. That's a fact of life. So I would suggest that you go down, you get yourself a first-class firearm. It may be a rifle. It may be a shotgun. It may be a pistol. I mean, it all depends, you know, what your local guys recommend. Call you may not believe in the NRA, but call them and get their recommendations. Go to an expert. Go down and buy that weapon, and then go down and take a safety course. They will teach you how to use it effectively. They will teach you how to be safe when using it. They will teach you how to keep it safe, particularly if you have smaller children in your home. But you know what? It's one of those things that may be as indispensable as a battery for your flashlight, an extra battery for your cell phone, or the food in your food locker. That's my personal suggestion to you.
But I think as a follow-on to that, people also need to know the various safety techniques as it relates to medical. So a good Red Cross course in CPR would be really helpful.
Terrific idea.
Yeah, and so many members of the family can take that. So if somebody...
Yeah, you could make it a family outing.
Mm-hmm. And but this is the kind of thing that needs to be talked about. All the things that we've talked about, they need to be talked about around the family dinner table. And so it just becomes part of the everyday conversation. So it's not all of a sudden, you know, the disaster takes place and everybody panics. We don't want any panic, because in every situation, it's the calm, patient person that's going to get us through all this.
The prepared person.
Exactly.
Exactly. Because if you're prepared, you're going to be a hell of a lot more calm. You're going to be a hell of a lot more stoic, and you're going to be way safer than if you're not.
Absolutely.
Nancy, this has been absolutely terrific. Thanks very much. I hope people listened. I hope they got some good ideas. And most of all, I hope they act on them.
I do, too. And as I say, if they go back to my website, nationalsafetyexpert.com, they will find a great deal of information that I think will help them read, and also the books are on the website. So
yes, folks, I highly recommend both Nancy's website, and by the way, she has some other great links there, and I also recommend her books. Okay, they're you're not reading a Tom Clancy novel, but a Tom Clancy novel won't save your life. Nancy's books will. Nancy, thanks very, very much. We'll look forward to another interview in the near future.
Great. Thank you, Reed.
Bye now.
For more information about Reed and his work, please click on the globe in front of you on the webtalkradio.net page. You can also click on his book, Land for Love and Money, and his new best-selling historical western series, Threads West, an American Saga. Watch for the second volume of the saga, Maps of Fate, coming soon. And, of course, if you've missed any shows, just click on show archives to catch up. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed L. Rosenthal on the Right Side.